Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. Today, we are about to talk to Craig Fear, who is a local cookbook author, a bone broth enthusiast, and also a nutritional therapy practitioner, an NTP. So we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. We're going to talk about traveling and food and how to support our guts with bone broth and delicious soup. So we've got a really great show here. So welcome, Craig.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we're getting started, just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Craig Fear, and I kind of was a nutritional therapy practitioner, NTP. Okay. I moved to this area, to the Pioneer Valley, 10 years ago, mm-hmm. After getting certified as a nutritional therapist.
Yep.
And for the first 7-8 years or so I was here, I worked with people around kind of gut issues. I had a few offices in Northampton.
Yeah.
And only recently I just kind of transitioned away from that into more like writing cookbooks and kind of writing on my blog.
Cool. Yeah, that's because that's how I started to know you, when we were both practitioners at Clinic Alternative Medicines on Main Street. And yeah, you had your office and saw a lot of folks in and out. And you were doing a lot with like fish oil and now you're cooking with fish oil.
Well, no, I'm not cooking with fish oil.
Okay, just kidding. I made that up, guys.
Okay, good. I wasn't sure if you were joking there. Definitely not cooking with fish oil. I would not recommend that anyone do that.
Okay, just kidding. So now you're doing a little bit more. You're doing writing, you're doing blogging, you're writing cookbooks. Mm-hmm. So how did you make that transition from being an NTP for 7 or 8 years in this area to, like, you know, making that transition in your life? Because that's kind of that's a very big shift, going from private practice to...
It happened very, very slowly. I didn't plan it. I never thought I'd be doing this.
Yeah.
It was not part of the plan at all.
All the best things are not part of the plan.
Totally unexpected. It just kind of happened little by little. I had a friend who was really into kind of online marketing and blogging and writing, and he just really encouraged me to start a blog. I resisted it for like a year. I just said, I don't have time, like, you know, to do this. Who the heck's going to read this stuff?
What do you think the resistance was? Like, where
time.
Was it? It was
time.
You were just like, I just don't have time for it.
You know, and I could, you know, he told me, if you're going to do this, like, just, you have to keep up with it. You have to do a lot of it. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to keep up with it. And then
it has to become like a habit.
Yeah. And then I did one blog. I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I got set up with a new blog, and I said, I'll do one, or I'll do a few, and I'll just see how it goes. And it just so happened that my first blog I ever wrote, which was called
Six Tips for Healthier Coffee Drinking.
Yeah.
I love it.
I had no idea what I was doing. I just threw it out there, and I thought, well, if I'm going to start blogging, I'm going to let people know that here's my biggest weakness myself, is I'm a coffee drinker.
Yeah.
And, but I started to, you know, put a health spin on it.
Okay.
And it went, I don't know if it went viral, but it did really well. And it continues actually to get like rank really well on Google.
Yeah.
And that would kind of like, I saw the light immediately. I'm like, oh my God, I cannot believe people are reading this. Like, okay,
that's,
I get
so
it now.
Cool.
I need to do more of this. And it originally started just to kind of share nutritional health tips and to get people to kind of sign up and work with me, for in person. But then it just kind of evolved into like blogging and monetizing my blog and writing books and making, you know, personal products, and took on a whole life of its own a few years later.
Absolutely. That's really cool. So when you say monetizing your blog, what exactly does that mean for people listening who maybe are writers themselves and kind of want to, you know, think about transitioning like their passion into blogging? Like, what does that mean for you and for your world?
Yeah, monetizing your blog just means bringing an income from your blog.
Okay.
I get that question a lot from people. Like, how do you do that?
It's a big mystery when you're not in there. Just like, wow, I can like make money from just like writing on the internet.
That's exactly what I, when I saw that people doing this, like all these lights went on in my head. Like, oh my God, you can do this. Like, this is amazing.
It's a lot of freedom. Yeah. You know, it's a lot of creative freedom as well as like the freedom of time.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's like, I don't have the time, but it actually in a lot of ways allows you the freedom of time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it's done for me. And so there's a number of ways people monetize their blog. I mean, if you have like a ton of traffic, some like, you know, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of page views per month, you can make a lot of money just through advertising on your blog.
Like other people will pay.
Well, you just put ads. You have these ad networks, Google Ads or other ad network servers. And so ads show up on your blogs. People click on them. You make a little bit, you know, a little bit. But if you get a lot of impressions, you can make a lot of money. It's not like a good strategy to start out with if you're just starting. I mean,
Of course.
It takes a lot of time to get a lot of traffic. My blog has never had a ton of traffic. It's grows a little bit each year, but I'm not like a big traffic blogger. But I do have ads on my blog. I don't love them, but they've allowed me to kind of do this full time, and so it was a compromise I had to make, and I'm okay with it for now.
Sounds like a great compromise.
Yeah. So there, I mean, there's advertising income, and the best way really is like your own product. Your own, you make your own products, and the most popular is ebooks. And so I've written three books, all self-published. They're on Amazon. You can get print copies. You can download them on Kindle.
Yeah.
And that's been the best thing I've done. Other people do online courses.
Okay.
I have tried that. It has not gone great for me. I'm kind of over that. It's a ton of work. You can absolutely do wonderfully with it if your heart's in something to help people with. It's an awesome way to kind of bring an income, but it's a tremendous amount of work.
Absolutely.
I did it, and I just didn't keep up with it. I did a gut health healing course, which was really good. I think it's I was really proud of it, but it just became too much work and too many things you got to keep on top of, and membership programs. And
I think that you kind of touched on something. When it feels like it's work, it's not worth it. Like, it's got to have the energy of fun and enthusiasm and excitement.
Yeah.
And of course, there's kind of things that, you know, as any person who's self-employed or anyone who's, you know, putting their passion project out there, that there's things that sometimes we have to figure out along the way, and these sort of, you know, creative problem solving, if you will. But yeah, as soon as it starts to feel like work, it's like we're either thinking about it wrong, or we just try a different direction that has a little less resistance, you know, because, you know, it's supposed to be fun.
And that's where books come in. I mean, there's a lot less resistance in that. You know,
really?
You just write, you write it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you just put it up for sale on your site, or you put it on Amazon.
I love the simplicity. You're like, you just write it and then you put it up for sale. It's pretty simple.
Tell
folks.
People, we've all written like we've all written like the content of about hundreds of books in our life. We've just never organized it into a book form. You know, like it's just organizing it into a book form. It's
Let's talk about that, because I feel like I bump into you a lot in Northampton, and whenever I see you, you're at a coffee shop.
Always.
I know you love your coffee. And you've told me a little bit about your writing process. So you're, and I know you're, you, I know you laugh, because but you're very organized, and you also have a great if you've written three books, I'm going to go ahead and say that you're pretty organized. I'm going to give you some credit on that one. But can you talk a little bit about what your kind of day-to-day structure is as a writer, keeping organized so you can build to something? Because it's not just, it's a step-by-step project to write a book. So I guess, tell us a little bit about what your project is as a cookbook writer, because there's a lot of components to creating recipes, getting all the way to the finished product.
I don't have any like perfect scientific formula to this. I just, you know,
kind of just day-to-day overall structure, whatever.
I guess when I decide to write a book, I just feel like I have to be all in on it, and like that's what I'm going to be doing.
Having the mental component, being like, this is what I'm doing.
This
right
is
now.
What I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
And I try not to like do other stuff at the same time. I mean, I'll blog, I'll share blogs and recipes from it to kind of, you know, tease it as I go, get people interested. But for me, it's like I can't. Some people are like, you know, I'll just write a little bit, and you know, through 2, 3, 4 years, it'll be ready. I'm like, I can't. I just need to like really focus on it.
Yeah.
And
do you give yourself like a window of time, or are you like, I'm going to try to do this from like January 2017 to 2018, or like?
Yes. And then it's always usually double whatever I think.
Good to know, people.
Almost always.
Yeah.
And so my first book took me 4 months to write.
Okay. And your first book was the 30-day heartburn solution?
30-day heartburn solution.
Okay.
And that's not a recipe book.
Okay.
So,
but your first product that you were promoting on your website and on Amazon. I remember that being like a big Amazon push for you at the time, like a big ebook. Or it was published as well as electronic, correct?
Self-published.
Okay. Yeah.
I used a company. I hired a company to kind of do the cover design and the editing.
Okay.
And do all the things that needed to be done correctly on Amazon to kind of format it. And
gotcha. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your first book took how long to write?
It took me about 4 months to write, and I was kind of working on it every day.
Gotcha.
You know, for 4 months, which is kind of sounds like a relatively brief amount of time for a book, but I was really working on it. Every day. It was a short book. It was like a little under 300 pages.
Okay.
But I just, you know, I outlined it ahead of time. It, you know, it changed and it evolves as you go, but I had a general idea of kind of what I wanted to kind of write about. And then it was just kind of sitting down and doing it. And, you know, some days are better than others. Some days I just sit there and stare at a blank screen and I can't come up with anything. And some days it kind of flows a little bit better than others. But I know if I sit down and I do it every day, like, it's going to happen.
Yeah. So did you got your cup of coffee in the morning and then you sat down from what, like 10 to 3 and then took a break or what was
that
your...
long. That
was generous. Yeah.
Maybe 9 to 12 at the most, 2-3 hours in the morning, take a break and then try another 2-3 hours in the afternoon. Sometimes that afternoon is not as good as the morning.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, that's, you know, a session in the morning, a session in the afternoon is kind of how I approach it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And if you're just tuning in, we are here, you're listening to Energy Matters, and we're chatting with Craig Fear today, who is a cookbook author, a writer, bone broth enthusiast, as well as a world traveler. And, you know, I think that, a big part of, you know, a lot of people who work in the alternative, you know, healing world and the healing arts, we have a lot of, the more you practice, the more you kind of get understanding around doing this work. And I think a lot of people have something to say and are really curious about how to organize their thoughts and organize themselves and put out a product, you know? So the sort of business side can be really healing for people as well who are in this work. So, as well as just anyone who's interested in writing and putting a book out into the world about the things that they love and that they're passionate about. So we're just picking Craig's brain a little bit because he's done this 3 times over so I think he's got some great pieces of advice for us so far. So a session in the morning, writing session in the morning, take a break, and then have another afternoon sesh for writing.
That's pretty much how we do it.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. We're here talking about traveling and being inspired by food, as well as having this sort of, you know, kind of theme that we've been talking about is food is medicine and food is what heals us. And, you know, our creative passions are what heal us. And, you know, Craig is living a pretty healthy life. And so we're here to, you know, chat a little bit more about how he does that and his process. So, so welcome back, Craig.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about your cookbooks. So you said you already mentioned that your first cookbook was the 30-Day Heartburn Solution.
Yeah.
And that was really rooted in when you were a nutritional therapy practitioner, kind of doing more like gut health centered stuff. And do you want to talk a little bit about what your like first book was all about?
I mean, for people who have heartburn, basically GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, it's such a millions of people have this thing, you know, where the acid from your stomach refluxes into your esophagus and burns it. And, you know, most people are taking Tums and Rolaids and then all these, you know, more high tech things, you know, Prilosec and Nexium, Zantac, and, they temporarily stop it, but they don't, you know, get at the root of it. So I talked in the book how you can use foods to get at the root of it so you don't have to use those medications anymore, which can have some long-term effects. Most people don't realize that it's not good to stay on those things long-term. They contribute to bone loss. And,
I didn't know that.
Yep, especially the ones like Prilosec and Nexium. And so I show people how to use food to kind of wean themselves off of those medications and just restore the kind of proper acidity in the stomach, which is not too much acid. That's kind of the myth. It's not because you have too much acid. It's because you have acid in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Oh, and, that's very interesting.
And then part of that protocol was bone broths and using these kind of traditionally prepared bone broths, not the ones in the stores, but ones you make at home. They're really nutrient dense. They're really easy for the body to digest. They're very soothing to the gut.
And that
was kind of part of kind of the protocol I used in that. And that kind of led into another kind of world of doing these other cookbooks, which I didn't realize at the time.
And it's funny because when I first met you, we were in a business networking group and you were really passionate about bone broths and you were promoting this book. And so I was learning a lot about gut health and, you know, like all this acid reflux kind of stuff. And I was like, wow, like he's really, and, you know, of course I've been vegetarian for like 14 years and, you know, vegan for the last couple. And, you know, but you were like so passionate about this work. And I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to try making my own bone broth because I come at things like, you know what? I want to always experiment and I want to always have, see how things respond with my own body. Mm-hmm. And if somebody's really passionate about something, like I'll give it a shot, you know, like I have my own beliefs, but it's important to challenge my own beliefs. I feel like that's part of my thing. Mm-hmm. And so, so I was like, all right, I'm going to buy a whole organic chicken from the grocery store, having like never, ever, ever done this before. And I like dropped it into a pot and cooked it. Cause when you're making bone broth, you cook it for chicken, I think, is less so than a lot of other bones, but I think I cooked it for like 4 hours. It was steaming up my whole kitchen. And I was just like, oh, I'll just give the extra meat to my cats. Like extra meaning like a whole chicken like that. I didn't realize a lot of things about what I was doing. And I made my first bone broth, and I never having really eaten meat in a very, very long time, I was like eating and sipping and, you know, cooking and making this whole thing. And I was very ill. My system was like, what did you just put into your body?
I don't know what you did. I don't know.
I think it was just my body wasn't used to having like so much meat all at once. I woke up all night. I had like the meat sweats that night. But typically this is in moderation. This is something that is done with
most people. They're not going to have that reaction. I don't want to scare people away.
No, it wasn't a scary story. It was supposed to be a funny story about me being very silly. But I ended up giving away all this delicious bone broth to friends who did consume it in a healthy way. It was made with a lot of love. I just, you know, it was just my very silly foray into making bone broth. Yeah, me neither. No, I do know what happened very clearly. But so bone broth was like a big part of your kind of like healing and helping people like solve their own gut issues. Yeah. This food is medicine kind of definitely. Process. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it kind of like blossomed into a whole other world. Because bone broth by itself is just a broth.
Yeah, I mean, you know, cooks use it. I mean, it's just it's a base broth and stock, slightly different, but they kind of use them as a base for kind of soups and sauces and stews in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But if you kind of look around the world, every culture kind of uses them. Almost every culture has like a, you know, they make fish broth or whatever animals they're raising or hunting. You know, they use all parts of the animal and they use the bones for these broths and stocks, and they cook them down, and you get this really nutrient rich kind of liquid that you can use for, you know, primarily I use them mostly for soups. You can use them for other things, but
so tell us a little bit about the process of creating bone broths and what goes into them that's a little different than like a typical stock where you might like tell us a little bit about like bone broth
is. The words are kind of used interchangeably. There's a lot of kind of confusion around them. In the culinary world, a broth is like a lightly cooked bones with a little bit more meat. It gives a kind of a nice kind of meaty flavor, and you could kind of use in light soups. Mm-hmm. And then a stock is something that's cooked for a much longer period. It usually has more bones than meat, and you kind of really get a lot of the kind of nutrients out of the bones. And it's kind of used, it's more of a gelatinous, you get more gelatin out of it, and it's more of something for maybe a like a stew or a sauce or something that has a longer cooking time, a thicker soup or something like that. And then in the nutrition world, sometimes we get them confused a little bit. But essentially, for simplicity, the terms are used interchangeably. You're kind of simmering meat and bones and kind of the gelatin-rich parts of kind of animals that are attached to bones for anywhere for maybe a few hours. You can even go up to a day or even longer.
That's a long time to have something in the kitchen.
Cooks don't usually go that long, but in the nutrition world, which I came from, the longer you cook these things, the more nutrients you get out of them.
It's slow and low. Yep. It's not like you're doing a running boil. It's like a slow and low, like it's just slowly letting this stuff seep out.
And that simmering kind of leaches out the minerals from the bones and the kind of the gelatin and all the good stuff in the gelatin and in the collagen rich parts.
Okay.
Kind of seep out a lot of good kind of anti-inflammatory amino acids and nutrients that kind of just infuse the water. And then you can flavor it up with herbs and veggies, you know, which is typically done all over with, you know, carrots, onions, celery, whatever.
And all that spices. Stuff would kind of go in towards the end.
Towards the end. And then, so in the nutrition world, the longer you do that, the better. And so then we use that for, a variety of kind of gut health issues.
Okay.
In the culinary world, probably wouldn't go like longer than a day, and that's probably more than what most cooks would do. But you can still get an incredibly delicious,
hearty
broth, and it's so good, and it's used all over the world in all cuisines in many different ways.
So how exactly, and you can go into depth as much or as little as you like. So what is it that broth does to support our overall gut health? I know you said there's a lot of minerals and collagen and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like what is it doing that is supporting that whole system?
Well, first of all, it's just very easy to digest. It's just primarily a liquid, and then you can cook things in that liquid, but be it vegetables, herbs, meats. So it's very easy for the body to process this. It doesn't have to do a lot of digestion. Like if you were to eat, as good as vegetables are for us, sometimes if we have a weakened digestion, it can take a little more digestive fire to digest kind of like cruciferous vegetables, harder vegetables, or even, certain types of meats if they're not cooked properly. So if you're having digestive difficulty, broth is easy on the body to digest, but it can also support different aspects of the digestive system. There's things in it that can kind of normalize hydrochloric acid in your stomach and kind of help reset it. It nourishes the wall of the small intestine. Like there's one of the amino acids is glutamine in bone broth.
Okay.
It's one of the kind of richer, more abundant amino acids.
Okay.
Well, you go to the supplement aisle, and one of the more popular digestive supplements is L-glutamine, so people are taking that to kind of help the lining of their small intestine, but you can get it, in much more.
If you cook it,
if you cook it the right way, you get it in a more natural state in a bone broth. And so it's very easy on the digestive system. It kind of nourishes the gut wall. And obviously you can infuse it with different, herbs and stuff.
Even more nutrients.
All sorts of stuff, turmeric and ginger, whatever. And you can make it delicious too.
Yeah, that's really cool. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Energy Matters at WXOJLP 103.3. And you're listening to myself, Caroline Rutterman, and chatting with Craig Feer today. A little bit of we're talking about his cookbooks. Craig is a writer, and we're talking about bone broth and sort of the aspect of nutritional health, gut healing, all that kind of fun stuff. And Craig, you have a lot of this information about how to make more detailed recipes on your website. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what your website is so that people know also if they're just like, how do I do that? That they can go back to your site and kind of, because you have tons of blogs. Uh-huh. Tons of information on your website, as well as your books. Mm-hmm. So give us a way for people to come find you.
My blog is fearlesseating.net.
Okay.
Not .com, .net.
Yeah, so that's F-E-A-R, like Craig Feer, less L-E-S-S,
eating.net. Yeah, and all sorts of blogs there. My books are, there's a new link for them, so all the information's there.
Awesome. So how did... So you were doing this kind of nutritional therapy back in the day, kind of wrote your first book, The 30-Day Heartburn Solution, kind of helping people with acid reflux and GERD. Mm-hmm. So you're making all these bone broths. And how did you all of a sudden transition from going to bone broth to being a cookbook and soup enthusiast? Because it doesn't seem like that far of a jump, but where was that little magic that just slipped in?
Again, it just happened very organically. I think the point at which I said, oh, I think I'm going to make this my whole blog all about broths and soups now. And this is all I'm going to be writing about now, which is kind of a weird thing. But
no,
I
kind of had
that realization.
Your eyes always light up as soon as you start talking about like soups. It's kind of amazing.
After the second book on broth. So I wrote my second book, Fearless Broths and Soups, after 30 Day Heartburn Solution. And then I wrote another book, my third one, which was the second one on broth and soup, called The Thai Soup Secret.
Okay.
And again, I wasn't planning to do another broth and soup book after the first one. It just kind of happened.
Yeah.
And then in the process of writing it, towards the end of the process of writing it, I just started realizing, yeah, I think I could write about this all the time. And there's tons of content here and tons of things to explore.
There's no limit.
Like, yeah. So I wrote my second book just on recipes I'd made through the years. Just kind of a general book on broths and soups for kind of like the beginner, with all sorts of different recipes from like, basic kind of creamy vegetable soups we all grew up with, like, you know, tomato soup or whatever.
And delicious,
then
yeah.
Simple like sausage and meatball soups, like a French onion or Italian, you know, meatball and seafood soups and Asian soups, which are my favorite, because I traveled to Asia many years ago, and that's kind of maybe how I first got into it. I just loved the cuisine of Asia, specifically Thailand is where I went, and I loved all these kind of noodle soups and brothy soups.
Yeah, they're really known for their soups out there.
Oh, yeah, and you get them on the street, you get them everywhere, in the markets, and then...
Are they making bone broths as their base?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's how they start, that's the foundation of their
definitely.
Soups.
Oh, yeah, that's how they do it.
That's cool.
And they make it right on the street. You can see it making it right. All the vats of bone broth are simmering away in the markets.
Oh, my gosh.
The smells are amazing.
I love street food. So
good. Yeah, it's just everywhere.
It's so good.
And then after that second book, I went to Thailand. I wasn't planning on writing a book. I just went because I wanted to get out of New England winter.
you were like a snowbird. You're
out of
like,
here.
Bye, New England.
As soon as I got there, of course, I was really excited, of course, about the food.
Yep.
And I knew what to expect this time. And I was, of course, gravitated immediately to the soups. And I just started, of course, everywhere. I was eating all the soups with just wild abandon. I was just like a kid in a candy store.
Craig Fear, wild abandon.
And then somewhere halfway through the trip, I started thinking, you know, there's just so many soups here that people in the West don't know about that don't serve in Thai restaurants.
Oh.
You know, there's like two or three that they serve, like Tom Kha Gai and Tom Yum as appetizers. But all the other soups, like, no one knows about them. And I thought, well, I could write about this and make this another book.
Just like bringing all this like good knowledge and like delicious flavors over here.
And I put a health, you know, they're really healthy for you because most of them are gluten, they're almost all dairy free because dairy's not common in Thailand,
right?
And most are gluten free.
Okay.
And if they were not, I kind of adapted them in the book to be gluten free, but most of them are. They use rice noodles. They don't use wheat noodles as much. I mean, a little bit.
But now you can even get like, you know, gluten-free noodles, so even that's not that hard to
switch. Yeah, so it's a really natural kind of fit for like gut health too, not just like delicious cuisine, like traditional cuisine, but also it's really good for your gut. And they use all these kind of traditional Thai herbs, you know, lemongrass and galangal and kaffir lime leaves. So that became my third book with all these kind of traditional Thai soup recipes.
Cool.
And then I said, okay, I'm gonna let's make this all about.
Let's do this. We are here today interviewing Craig Fear, who is a bone broth enthusiast and a local cookbook author. And we were just rolling deep into a conversation about traveling to Thailand and soups. You know, I think that, you know, like Craig was saying, a big part of the Thai culture is the foundation of these bone broth soups. And you know, he was talking about how you can street carts, you see these, you know, these broths that are cooking and cooking all day, and you know, it's, and then everything is made right into that and right on top of that. And so tell us a little bit about maybe like a couple of your favorite soups. So tell us a little bit about the soups that we often see out here at the Thai restaurants, and then some of the other ones that we don't see out here that you really, really love.
Yeah,
some of the flavors and things like that.
I mean, the two that you always see in like every Thai restaurant, you'll see Tom Yum, which is Tom Yum Gung is a typical one. Gung is shrimp.
Okay.
So it's just a simple kind of shrimp, sometimes chicken broth, with like I call it the classic trifecta of Thai herbs, which is lemongrass, galangal, and kefir lime. So you just simmer those herbs in there, and it gives you this amazing flavor. And then you season it up with like fish sauce and lime juice.
Gotcha.
And a little like palm sugar if you wanted. You could sweeten it a little bit.
If you went just to the palate, yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit. And typically with shrimp, but you could also do it with chicken. And that's a common one you'll see. And then some veggies. And that's a very common one you'll see in almost every Thai restaurant. And the other one is the tom kha gai,
okay.
Which is a chicken, coconut milk chicken galangal soup.
Okay.
And that's another common one. Those are fantastic. You can't go wrong with those.
Okay.
I put those like in the first chapter for everyone to like to kind of just
make your own.
They're so easy too. I mean, it's so easy. And a lot of people say, well, where do you get some of the Thai herbs from? You know,
that like was going to be one of my questions. Yeah. Where are you getting these ingredients from?
Because yeah.
Galangal is like, where do you get that?
Well, if you live in the Pioneer Valley, we're very lucky. We have a fantastic Asian market here in Hadley. It's small. It's bigger than it looks from the outside. It kind of goes back from the street a bit.
You're talking about Trans?
Yeah, Trans World Food Market.
They are the best.
They're great.
Every aisle is a different country.
It's a different adventure in every aisle.
And it's so fun. But you should definitely go in and know what you're looking for and don't be afraid to ask for help if you get lost in there.
Everything in my cookbook is in there. It's
awesome.
It's nothing like... It's really not that as exotic as you might think, like some Southeast Asian cuisine. A lot of like common things they put that are used in almost every soup recipe we use here. It's not that dramatic of a difference. So
everything that would be that you could use in your cookbook, you can find at Trans World Mart. Everything. Awesome. So
it's always in stock. I've never been there and be like, oh, we're out of, you know, sometimes they have out of a few things, but everything I've always needed, they've always had.
That's cool. That's really cool. Is this stuff that you can also find at like Whole Foods? Not to buzz market too much, but like
some of the stuff, but not it won't be as extensive. I've never found galangal at Whole Foods. I don't go to Whole Foods a ton. I go more to River Valley Market.
Okay.
But I've never seen galangal. The Thai chilies, not I won't always see it. Sometimes I'll see them there, but those are really kind of central to a lot of Thai cooking. Some of the herbs that are more central to Thai cooking are not always there, like curry leaves or some different things you can find that are actually not in my cookbook, but some things that are kind of fun to experiment with you can find in Trans. And they have, of course, all the middle aisles, which are kind of crazy with all the exotic stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes I will take some shortcuts and use some of the kind of jarred paste. I try not to do that too often, but sometimes I will, and you'll know you're hard to find those outside Trans.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Did they, is there an organic standard within a lot of the like Thai ingredients in terms of like the food and imports and things like that? Because I know that, living in the Pioneer Valley that, you know, organic is something that I think a lot of people are trying to always fit into their diets.
Yeah.
Is that, how does that fit in to your knowledge?
As far as I know, Trans World Food Market, some of the stuff is organic, but it's not certified organic, so you have to ask. They get it from a lot of small producers around, like, kind of in warmer climates. They get some stuff from Florida, some stuff from Hawaii, so you gotta ask them. I think some stuff is, and some stuff isn't. In the middle aisles, you can find some organic stuff, like organic coconut milk.
Yeah.
Some good quality fish sauce, soy sauce. A lot of the stuff is... not, you know, a lot of stuff is highly processed too. So
sure.
You just got to do a little digging.
Yeah. And I think that is really important because because it's a family run business and those guys know their products in and out.
Yeah.
Like they can tell you if something's off the market and why a certain size or a certain quantity isn't in and like what's going on with this company and this company. Like they're really, really passionate about
they're great. They're very helpful.
So don't be afraid if you are interested in organic, like, because it's like an American standard when, you know, a lot of the products here are like organic or local or whatever, all that stuff. So don't be afraid to ask when you're sourcing those ingredients because it's your food. And like, you know, we were talking about food is medicine. And if that is an important standard to have, you know, these, you know, pesticide free grown things, then explore that, you know.
Sometimes I'll go to like when I know River Valley has a local good organic product like ginger. I'll run over to River Valley after and get some stuff that I know, you know, maybe not be as good there, but they have a lot of good stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So now for the good stuff. Tell us some of the Thai recipes that are a little maybe lesser known that are on your kind of top to go.
I'll tell you like, one of my favorite recipes in the book that I eat a lot more in winter.
Is this
now.
From your new book, The Thai Soup Secret?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a Thai congee. And congee is like the easiest thing in the world to make, and I call it the oatmeal of Asia.
Is it congee, like C-O-N-G-E-E?
Probably.
Okay.
Congee.
Just because I remember seeing,
I call it congee.
There was a restaurant when I lived in New York that we used to all go to. It was kind of a very kitschy restaurant in Chinatown called Congee Village.
Oh, yeah.
So I wasn't sure if it was like congee, if it was like the same spelling. But okay, so so congee is is an oatmeal, like a Thai oatmeal.
Yeah, but it's with rice instead of oats. So it's a long simmered, usually white rice in broth, often in broth, sometimes in water, but it's good to use broth.
Okay.
And you just cook it instead of like, you know, if you cook rice, you cook it, what, like 15 minutes, like white rice maybe. Mm-hmm. And then, but this, you're going to simmer it for like at least an hour. And what happens is it kind of forms like a porridge. The rice breaks apart and thickens, and the starch kind of thickens the water. So it becomes like a thick kind of porridge-like consistency. And that's like everywhere across Asia. Every culture has these kind of congees, and there's like a million ways you can flavor it up. And something as simple as like, you know, rice and broth, that sounds kind of boring, but it's amazing how delicious you can make this. In Thailand, they have this thing called jok. It's not a joke.
How do you spell is it like J-O-K?
Yeah, J-O-K.
Okay.
And it's a Thai kind of breakfast congee. And
what makes it breakfasty? Is it sweet?
No, it's savory.
Okay.
So it's just a lot of soups are just made for our breakfast food in Asia. And this happens to be one of those. And they serve it all over the streets of Bangkok. And it's basically just like a chicken or kind of pork broth. And they have, let's see, you put ginger in it, cilantro. You season it with fish sauce or soy sauce to taste. You can put other herbs in there, maybe Thai basil. Oftentimes it'll have like little flavorful pork meatballs. You don't have to put those in, but I like to put them in. And it's just so delicious.
Yeah.
It's so easy to make. So I'll make a big like pot of the congee, just the rice, at the beginning of a week. And then I'll just kind of put it in the fridge, and then I'll like scoop a little bit out. So I don't have to make, you know, it takes like an hour, hour and a half to make it. So if I make a big pot, then all I have to do is warm it up a little.
And add whatever
and
extra.
Whatever I want. Yeah.
Cool. That sounds really good. And yeah, I think that's something about, you know, soups is that once you can make a big batch all at once and, you know, kind of use that as, you know, your ongoing foundation of what else you put on top of it. And that's really cool. So, so let's get back to talking about some of your new books. So you had written a whole book on the fearless broths and soups, and then the Thai soup secret stemmed out of that. You were like, I want to make this my passion. I want to write about soups and have that kind of be my niche.
Yeah.
What was it about Thailand? Like, what called you to those flavors and that country? Mm-hmm. And like, do you have friends and family out there? Like, what was it about, like, that place in this world?
Yeah, well, I've been there. I went there on my first trip out of the United States. I went there for 4 months, winter of 2000, 2001. I went there for 4 months. Just traveled everywhere and just kind of fell in love with the country, fell in love with the cuisine and the climate.
Yeah, because when you're over there in the wintertime, it's basically like their warm, balmy summer time for us.
Summer, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
that's
fantastic.
Really nice.
Especially in the middle of February.
Oh, gosh. And everybody's showing
really
pictures
cheap.
Of shoveling 6 feet of snow. And you're like,
beach.
Bye,
it's
guys.
Great.
I'm going to get a massage. Oh, man. That sounds really nice.
Yeah. And then I just, I finally got to a point with like blogging and writing where I was making a little income from it to get out of here to travel in the winter after, you know, I moved here in 2008 and I was never really able to kind of do any traveling, starting a whole new business from scratch.
Yep.
So it took 7 years just to get to a point where like, hey, you know, I think I can get over there for like a month or two in the winter. And so I did. I had no intention to write a book. It just kind of happened out of being there. And then I started putting recipes together when I was over there. I started thinking about it. And then when I got back, I put it all together in a book form and took, I can't remember, 5-6 months to kind of get the recipes right, you know, kind of experiment with them, tweak them, get them how I wanted them, kind
That's
of put
cool.
it right at all.
Yeah.
It was like a full year actually, and then send it off to the company I used to put it together. It was like a full year from when I got back to when it was finally ready as a book.
Wow. How many recipes do you have in the Thai Soup Secret, your latest book?
I think 40 to 50 of them.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's not that many. I mean, I feel like, I think I always feel like shoot for that number. I feel like that's a good amount. You know, I look at recipe books that are like 500 recipes. I'm like, forget it. I don't, why do I want 500? I'm never going to make any of these.
So yeah. And sometimes those, a lot of those, when you get to that number, it's a lot of those recipes become inspiration or almost just a reference guide.
Yeah. You know? Make one or two and then it sits on your shelf for years and you have like one little kind of paper kind of bookmark.
It goes
into
a yard sale at some point. You're like, it's a heavy book. Yeah. So, were you remembering just the flavors from being over there and eating and kind of creating, like recreating your experiences with all these recipes? Like, cause a lot of these are, I guess let me back up a little bit. So a lot of the recipes, when you go to smaller countries, you know, they're often family recipes and they're often family flavors and sort of like their signature kind of combination of things. Yeah. Well, there's still the overall, you know, I get, do you know what I'm trying to say here? Yeah. Like there's sort of, a lot of the, sorry, I had two things in my mind and they came together at once. But there's sort of like the main outline and then you fill in the blanks yourself.
Well, that's what I tried to emphasize in the book with people. Like there's, I always try to tell people, you don't use this recipe as a kind of template, but here's how you vary it up. And in Thailand, one thing I love about Asian cuisine, especially in Southeast Asia, is you're not supposed to follow this recipe exactly. Everyone does it slightly differently. And then everywhere you dine out, everywhere you go, whether it's even eating on the street, they always have a little kind of caddy of sauces and seasonings where you flavor it up however you want.
So
I always show people, like, here's the base. And then you make it now how you want. You want like half a teaspoon of fish sauce? That's great. You want 2 teaspoons of fish sauce?
You go for it.
Go for it. Like you, chilies, lime juice, you know, this herb, that herb, you know, different kind of little sauces and seasonings that you can flavor it up to how you like. You want it sweeter? You want it saltier? You want it, you know.
And that makes a great family meal too, because, you know, if you are sitting around a table and you have a big bowl of broth and you have picky eaters who don't like lime or who don't like cilantro, then, you know, you can basically doctor it up to what individual tastes.
Yeah.
So that's a really, really nice family meal.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That's really cool. So talk to us a little bit about, what else you kind of enjoyed during your process of the Thai Soup Secret. When you were over there, tell us a little bit more about your Thai Soup Secret and what process you enjoyed or, anything else that, you think people might be interested to know about the Thai Soup Secret book that you just came out with.
I enjoyed kind of making all the recipes and having eaten really well for about 4 months.
Yeah.
I had a lot of Thai soup.
That's great.
For like 4 or 5 months.
Yeah.
And just kind of tweaking it and like experimenting and, you know, like, okay, taking a little sip and like, ooh, that's good. Yeah. And then, you know, okay, a little more fish sauce and like, oh my God, this is it. And then, you know, having some friends come over and I would like, how do you, like, what do you?
Oh, you're everybody's like, favorite friend at that point.
Yeah. I had one guy who came over and I had this Tom Sop. It's like a pork rib Thai soup. It's so easy to make. You just kind of simmer pork ribs in a broth with the Thai seasonings, like lemongrass, galangal, kefir lime. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I really liked it. And I said, well, let me ask my friend here. And I just remember the look when he had that sip and it's like his eyes rolled back in his head, his eyes closed. And he just like this 5 second pause. And he's just like, you know,
you silenced the man.
And he's like, oh my God, that is, oh yeah. I'm like, okay, that's the recipe.
That's it.
I thought it was good, and he just confirmed it for me. Like, boom, that's so gratifying. Okay, this is it.
So if you want to make your friend's eyes roll back in their head and speechless, go get Craig's Thai Soup Secret book. That's online, as that's a digital format as well as a print in print book as well.
Kindle and print. You can order it from Amazon on their print. I just do print on demand through Amazon.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Energy Matters. This is Caroline Rutterman. We're here chatting with Craig Fear today, who's a cookbook author. Did you ever think that you would be a cookbook author when you were growing up?
Not a chance in hell.
Yeah.
Nope, I was not raised to do this.
No.
I was raised in the suburbs of Long Island.
Right.
I didn't do any cooking at all until after college.
Whoa.
Yeah, I didn't know how to cook. You know, wow. So this all happened. This was not part of the plan. I don't know if there ever was a plan, but I did not go to college for this. Let's put it that way.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing. When you were in Thailand, did you feel like were you learning from kind of the women? Did you take like culinary classes when you were out there? Because I know sometimes when you go to, countries, you can kind of find those like really local, amazing cooks that offer classes. Mm-hmm. Like, were you doing that kind of stuff, or were you just like eating everything?
A little bit of everything. I took a few classes. I took a, just kind of traveling around, sampling everything, asking questions. Just always asking questions to people, observing what they were doing, reading a lot of, I got a lot of Thai cookbooks and saw what, some of these authors were kind of doing, kind of mm-hmm. comparing what they were doing, finding like the similarities mm-hmm. and then, experimenting on my own when I was home and kind of finding my own kind of way of creating it and sharing it with Westerners, with Americans, and showing them how you can do this in your own kitchen. It's not I tried to take the mystique out of it, the mystery out of it for people. It's really, they're not hard recipes.
No.
They're really easy.
Yeah, I just got to try them. Yeah. And I think that your cookbooks are really easy to read, really easy to navigate. So if you are just tuning in, like I said, we're chatting with Craig Fear today of fearlesseating.net. Craig has some great cookbooks out there. His latest one is The Thai Soup Secret. Go check out his work. It's amazing. You won't regret it. And, there's ways to adapt it for any flavor, any palate. Even somebody like me who doesn't eat meat, you don't have to do the bone broth underneath it. Although, that does have the kind of food as medicine underpinnings to it to help your gut issues, all that kind of stuff. So,
You can do veggie broth.
You could do veggie broth.
Yeah, totally.
Spoken from the man himself.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of ways to kind of, experiment and explore a lot of new flavors and you never know where our life is going to take us when you try something new. All right. Take care, guys.